Okay, so welcome to all on the second series of this series that we're doing now called Relate, standing for Respect, Empower, Love, Ask, Talk, and Enjoy, which will hopefully be a successful formula for all successful relationships. Last week we began discussing the concept of respect. And what I want to do today is continue on with that topic and try and develop it a bit more. And then next week we'll go on to the next one. So a little bit, just let's do a little bit of a review, go through some of the points that we discussed last week. Last week we talked about the concept that love, which is the glue of all relationships, the thing which keep relationships together, with the things that bind people together. The problem with it is that it's a self-centered emotion, and that a relationship that is based on friendship or love alone can deteriorate very quickly into being a very self-absorbed and self-centered relationship. The type of relationships which we referred to last week as I love fish, on that story we talked about. And therefore, the foundation of all relationships, even before there can be love, has to be respect. Right, we talked about the marriage document, the ketubah, that doesn't actually mention love, it only mentions respect, because that is the foundation of all relationships. Now, let's just go through the definition of respect the way we discussed it last week. I actually copied it for you on the bottom of the handout. So you have it there, spelled out, just the definition that we sort of used as a defining thing for respect. And essentially it's all about the first line, and then it develops into the others. The definition of respect is that you value the other person as an individual outside of yourself, right? So if you can say about the other person that I value them as an individual outside of me, as a separate individual, that is the definition of respect. Right? And then what happens is everything else develops from there. Right? Everything else develops from there. In other words, all the other definitions. I acknowledge and value that the other person has needs that are different to mine, to which I need to respond. I acknowledge and value that the person has interests, perspectives, and opinions that are different to mine, to which I need to respond. And I acknowledge and value that the other person has a role, right? Because every person in a relationship has a role to play. And therefore, I value the role that the other person has that is different to the role that I play in the relationship. Okay. Now, the definition, these, in other words, respect is about preserving the individuality of the other person, because that's the danger of relationships, which we spoke about last week. The danger of relationships as they develop only from love is that the individuality of the people involved in the relationship becomes lost. Right? Because as we said, that relationships are not about two people becoming one new entity. It's about two people coming together as one world, but retaining and maintaining the individual value and the individuality. Right? Now, the definition that we spoke about last week is very important, because, you see, the word respect, when people talk about the word respect, they often confuse it with good manners. Right? Now, good manners is not respect. Good manners is very important. But good manners is a behavioral thing. Right? And a well-mannered, or, you know, we talk about a person being well brought up sometimes, right? Good manners or proper social conduct, that's a consequence of respect. It's not respect. Okay? Because respect, what respect is a mindset. Okay? It's a mindset of how I view the other individual. So when I talk about the foundation of respect being that I value the person as an individual outside of myself, right, It's not just that I see them as an individual. I want to just emphasize this. I don't think I made this clear last week. It's not just that I value them as an individual and I see them as another person outside of myself and they're not me and therefore I cannot smother them and cannot cause their individuality to be lost. It's much deeper than that. Respect actually is acknowledging that the other person has value, because every person has value. And respect means the valuing the other person as another individual that has value that I don't have and that can contribute to the relationship that which I cannot contribute. I see the other person as what we call in Hebrew a tzelem elokim. A tzelem elokim means the image of God, because we are taught that every human being was created in the image of God, which means that every individual, every single person, no matter who they might be, has a divine imprint. And respect means that I value that divine imprint. And I understand and acknowledge that divine imprint that that person has intrinsic value and has something to contribute and is significant and adds to the whole formula and adds to the whole process in ways which I cannot add, in ways that I cannot contribute, because every person is different. And therefore every person expresses their divine imprint in a different way. And every person therefore has what to contribute in a very valuable and significant way, that which I cannot contribute. And that translates into a relationship. Because in every relationship, if I believe that I'm the only person that contributes to the relationship, that's not a relationship. That's using another person for your convenience. A relationship means that we both contribute and we both acknowledge each other's differences, each other's intrinsic value, each other's individuality, each other's importance, and we both understand and really appreciate that each person has a different role to play and each person contributes significantly to that relationship in a unique and different way. All the other aspects of respect is a consequence of this idea. So really it's the first definition that's so important. Everything else, every other mindset of respect, every other behavior of respect, whether it's good social conduct or good manners or whatever the case, it's all a consequence of this concept. And in fact, needs to the concept of respect, the mindset of respect, is the same with every relationship, but the way it's expressed, as we'll see later, is different depending on the relationship. Now just to illustrate this idea a little bit stronger, there is a famous Talmudic story with Rabbi Akiva, the famous Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was a great sage, went away to study in yeshiva, raised many, many students, had 24,000 disciples, right? And we know that there's a tradition that all these 24,000 disciples, except with the exception of five, passed away tragically in a matter of 7 weeks between the festival of Pesach and the festival of Shavuot. And that's why we have a tradition that the time between Pesach and Shavuot is a time of mini mourning. We're not supposed to get married then, part of that time, and we don't take haircuts and music and things like that. Who were these sages of Rabbi Akiva? They were great sages in their own right. Each one of them was a great Torah leader. And we are told that because they were so great, God was very particular with them. He was very exact with them. And what he did was, because they didn't respect each other, they were lacking respect, it says, Le'nahagu kavod. They didn't have kavod, they didn't have respect for each other. As a punishment, they all passed away during a short period of time. The commentaries raise the following question, right? Rabbi Akiva was their leader, was their teacher. Rabbi Akiva has a fame, he's famous for many things. But he's famous for one particular line. And Rabbi Akiva was famous for the line where he commented on the verse in the Torah that says, Ve'ahavta l're'acha kamocha, you should love your fellow like yourself. And Rabbi Akiva was the one who said that this becomes the fundamental rule in the Torah. In other words, he says this is the basis. Loving a person like yourself is the basis of the Torah. It's a klal gadol. It's a great rule. It's an important principle. Now, Rabbi Akiva did not say this after his 24,000 students passed away. This was Rabbi Akiva's ruling, this was his teaching. He taught it to his students. And yet it was specifically his students that didn't respect each other. And some of the commentaries raised the question, what does that mean? Surely they should have learned, if they were real disciples, if they were honest disciples, they were real disciples of Rabbi Akiva, they would have learned and really absorbed the teachings of Rabbi Akiva, and they would have exercised the concept of real love for each other. So didn't they love each other? What was wrong with their relationships? Couldn't they absorb a simple teaching from their teacher, Rabbi Akiva? And the explanation is given that this was their problem. Their problem was they had tremendous love for each other, but they didn't base it on proper respect. The love was there, but the respect wasn't. What does that mean? We are taught that Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 disciples. Each person is different, right? Every person understands things differently. So although, you know, every teacher has their style, has their thing, but it's interesting that if you take any Jewish leader throughout the ages, you'll notice that he doesn't have one mold of disciple, right? He doesn't have one mold of disciple. Every Jewish leader in history, this is a historic analysis. If you examine the way Jewish leadership works, I mean all leadership actually, throughout the ages, you will see that there's a diverse range of different types of disciples of that teacher. Why? Because, you know, people, the nature of people is that everyone understands and processes things differently, right? So therefore, every person understands the teachings of their teacher, of their rabbi, of their leader in a different way. That's the way it works. Yes, of course, they've got a basic philosophy, you know, so if you belong to one leader, you subscribe to their philosophy, but nevertheless, each person has a different way of understanding it. Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 disciples. Rabbi Akiva had basic philosophies, he had basic outlooks on life, based on the principles of the Torah, but he had one sort of way of doing it. And everyone absorbed that, but everyone absorbed it in a different way. Every one of his disciples had a different way of understanding Rabbi Akiva's teachings. And therefore what you had is you had 24,000 different opinions, not a rare phenomenon among Jewish people, but right, it's fine. So everyone understood it differently, and that's great. Now the problem was that they loved each other so much that because we are taught, it's an amazing thing, because of their love for each other, everyone wished to impose their view on the other. I love you so much, so I need you to think like me. Because if I don't want you to think like me, then I'm not loving you. Understand? Because obviously the way I think must be right. I'm not stupid. The way I process the information, it's clear. To me, it's as clear as daylight that this is the way you got to go. Therefore, if I love people, I'll impose my view on them. And everyone had the same philosophy. So the bottom line is that you had 24,000 disciples of love, but they forgot the foundation of respect. Because respect means that yes, you have a view, and your view might be right, and someone else has a different view within the same philosophy, within the same context, but different. And before you can love that person, you need to respect them. And if you respect them, you will not disrespect their right to have a different view. The opposite of this, by the way, I think I might have mentioned this sometime in the past, but the opposite of this is a fascinating story that the Talmud tells us about the two yeshivot, about the two schools of learning. The one of the school of Shammai and the school of Hillel. Right? Many, many hundreds of disputes in the Talmud are between two schools of learning, the school of Shammai and the school of Hillel. They understood things differently. In fact, that was historically, it was around the year 70 that this took place, about the year 20, year 30, before the destruction of the Second Temple. Until that time, the Jewish Supreme Court was much more centralized. From that time on, it split into two, and there was the school of Shammai and the school of Hillel. And each one had radically different views on understanding Jewish law, all abiding by the same principles of Torah and Halakha, etc., but nevertheless had totally different views. And the Talmud tells us an amazing thing. that although they had unbelievable views, there was tremendous respect for each other. Now I want to just share with you what the respect was, because it involves a very complex halachic process, but I'm going to try to simplify because I don't want to take time now to explain it. But just for the purposes of the discussion, there were certain situations, certain marriages that according to the school of Shammai were permitted, and according to the school of Hillel were prohibited. Now, some disputes, now's not the time to go through the whole process of how halakha develops and works, but just let's accept this for the time being. A lot of halachic disputes are not with tremendous consequence. You know, you say something is permitted, something is prohibited, but it's fine. You can either do it or you don't do it. There were certain marriages, it's got to do with the levirate marriage, the yibum concept, which we don't have today. There were certain marriages that according to the school of Shammai, not only were permitted, but they were a mitzvah. It was a mitzvah to happen. It was a good marriage, a good relationship. Whereas the same situation, according to the school of Hillel, were actually prohibited relationships, and if that particular man, that particular woman would marry, their children would then be affected spiritually, and their children would not be allowed to marry mainstream Jewish community. Okay, you understand the radical difference between the two disputes, okay? Now, the dispute ultimately became resolved, but there was a time where people were not following the same view. There was a significant period of time where the community of Shammai was following the view of Shammai, the community of Hillel were following the view of Hillel. Okay? So you can imagine, let's understand what's happening here. According to the one school of thought, they're doing a mitzvah. But according to their neighbors down the road, according to the other community, the other shul, right, they're doing a terrible sin by engaging in such relationships. So you would imagine that the school of Hillel would stage protests and put ads in the paper how terrible the school of Shammai is, that they're engaging in activities which are completely prohibited according to halakha, according to them. And there would be an amazing tension, an amazing rift. And yet the Talmud tells us an amazing thing, that the two communities got on tremendously well with each other. It's a lesson we need to learn for today. The two communities had tremendous respect for each other. The two communities married each other's children, to the point that if someone from the yeshiva community of Shammai would want to marry a girl or someone or a boy from the school, from the community of Hillel, but or vice versa, and in one of them's view it was not a good marriage, you could not do it, they would let them know. They would say, this is not for you. For our community this is fine, for your community isn't fine. Because in our way of thinking, the way we've worked it out the best we can, this is our conclusion. The way you've worked it out, it's not. And we respect that. We respect that difference. We respect that right to think differently and to interpret differently and to arrive at a different view. Because we're both following the same principles. We're both following the same values. We're both following the same Torah. But we're coming out with different conclusions. And that's fine. That can happen. But the respect was amazing. But when it comes to the disciples of Rabbi Akiva, that didn't happen. When it came to the disciples of Rabbi Akiva, each one wanted to impose their view on the other. The love was tremendous. The love was tremendous because their teacher was a teacher of love. Rabbi Akiva taught love. He emphasized love. He demonstrated love. That's what he was. But what they forgot was that love must be based on respect. Because if love is not based on respect, it becomes self-centered, it becomes self-absorbed, and you want to impose you on the other person, you want to project you on the other individual, you want to undermine the individuality of the other individual, you want to smother the other person, you want to kill the individuality, and you can't have real love like that. And therefore, we are not taught that they didn't love each other, we are taught that they didn't respect each other. That's different. They didn't respect each other, they did love each other, and it was their love that actually brought to a lack of respect. Had they understood and absorbed the real value of respect first, then their love would have been different, and then they wouldn't have happened to them. So that's just an incredible Talmudic story that highlights this whole process of respect coming before love. Okay, now, let's try and develop this concept a bit further. Every relationship, this is an important principle, every relationship is a relationship of giving and receiving. What do I mean? In every relationship, every person in the relationship, doesn't matter what the relationship is, and there are different types of relationships, some are equal, some are hierarchical, But in every relationship, each party of the relationship has to give, and each one has to receive. That's the way relationships make. In fact, that is the design of relationships. There was, in the Talmud, there was a story about one heretic that came to ask one of the great sages. He says, if God is so powerful and has unlimited resources, why are there poor people in the world? Why can't just God has enough just to provide for everyone? And that's, of course, a great theological question. But the answer that was given in the Talmud is because without that, there would not be giving and receiving in the world. And the world must operate with mashpia and makabel, giving and receiving. Everyone has to learn to give. Everyone has to learn to take. And in a relationship, both people are givers. Both people are takers. That's why relationship works. And by the way, as we've mentioned previously, that both are difficult. It's not only giving that's difficult, but taking is also really difficult. But why do I bring this up now? Because part of respect means, that I view the other person as giving as well. I'm not the only one that's giving. And I value, as we said before, I value the contribution that that person is giving to the relationship. Now this is true with all relationships, because as we said last week, there are different types of relationships, right? And from a Jewish point of view, from a Torah perspective, the reason that there's different types of relationships are very important. Because, you know, on the one hand, the Torah believes very strongly in many relationships in a hierarchical structure, right? Teachers and students, parents and children are not buddies. They are different. One is has been given the responsibility to guide and to lead the other. Yes, there are some relationships that are equal, what I called last week horizontal relationships, friends, spouses, etc., siblings. But then there are some relationships that are vertical relationships. And in those vertical relationships, everyone is an individual. But even in the vertical relationships, everyone gives and everyone receives. That's often a mistake that people make in hierarchical relationships. Parents and teachers misunderstand that. Because one shouldn't confuse that with the different roles that people have, right? So for example, in a teacher-student relationship or a parent-child relationship, the parent has a very specific role and the child has a very specific role. And some of the expressions of respect that come from those roles are very different. That's why in the Torah there's a tremendous emphasis on respecting an older person. Children respecting parents, not sitting in their place, not interrupting them, not contradicting them, not calling them by their first name, all that kind of stuff. Right? Very, very strong. Students and teachers, very, very strong, specific, prescriptive guidelines of how that respect has to take place. But that respect is an outcome of the roles that they play. So therefore, if I need to be guided and led by my teacher, I need to express it in certain ways of respect in order for that to work and to be effective. But that doesn't mean that I'm not an individual. That doesn't mean that I don't contribute to the relationship. That doesn't mean that I don't have value, and intrinsic value, and specific value, and significant value. And therefore, in every relationship, there has to be respect given to both. The respect has to be both ways, because both parties always contribute to the relationship. So the teacher, although their specific goal is to guide the student, but the teacher receives from the student as well. And if the teacher doesn't see it that way, we've got a real fundamental problem in the relationship. We as parents receive from our children. Not the same thing we give to them, but we receive from them. We learn from them. Educating them and guiding them makes us better people. We learn about difference. We learn how to respect different feelings. We learn how to be sensitive to diversity. We learn how to educate every child in a different way. Right? That's a tremendous thing to learn. That's a tremendous thing to receive. And we learn to value that person, again, as having something that I don't have. My role might be the superior. My role might be the guide. My role might be the leader. But that doesn't mean that I'm not receiving from them. That doesn't mean that they don't have value and contribution to the relationship that I don't have. Okay? And therefore, because of that tremendous, tremendous significant value that every single person has in the relationship, they need to be respected, because everyone has something unique that the other person doesn't have. It doesn't matter if the relationship is hierarchical or the relationship is vertical or is horizontal. Every relationship, we need to separate between roles, and the roles are different. And sometimes in the roles, yes, there's a leader and there's a receiver. There's a leader and there's a follower. That's in terms of the roles. But in terms of what everyone is getting and giving, everyone gives, everyone receives. Everyone has value the other one doesn't have. Everyone has a contribution that the other one doesn't have. So let's have a look at some of these expressions of respect in some of the sources. Right? Know that, I'll just give you an extreme example. And we'll go to some other examples soon. But an extreme example of respect and dignity. In the Talmud, there are laws. In times of old, when there was a Sanhedrin, when there was a Jewish Supreme Court, the Torah believes in very rare circumstances, but nevertheless, the Torah does support capital punishment. And yet, there are extensive laws in the Talmud when the court is, if they do eventually convict someone and sentence them to death, there are very specific ways of how that has to be carried out. You're killing the person, right? You're killing them, you're punishing them. And yet, all along the way, there are specific steps that need to be taken to preserve the dignity of that person that is about to be killed. Why? Because even that person might be a criminal, might be a criminal deserving of capital punishment, but that person is still an image of God. That person still has a divine imprint. That person still deserves to be respected. That person still has value. And I need to still preserve the individuality of that person as long as that person is still alive. I might be obligated as the judge of the court to put that person to death. But it doesn't matter. That's my role. That's my job. But that person still needs to be respected. It's an extreme expression of respect that we find in the Talmud. There's a sage in the Talmud, in the Mishnah, called Rabbi Lazar ben Shamua. And he was asked, he lived very long. In fact, there's a fascinating discussion in the Talmud about a number of sages that lived long, and their students questioned them and asked them, like, what did you do to deserve longevity? So this Rabbi Lazar ben Shammah was asked by his students, they said to him, what did you do to deserve such a long life? So he told them. He didn't tell them in arrogance, he told them because he wanted them to learn. And he listed three things that he was very, very particular about. Some of them were spiritual things. But one of the things he mentioned was that in the times of the Talmud, when a person would lecture, right, would walk into a lecture hall, it wouldn't be like now, people sit on chairs. People would sit on the floor. That's what it was. The students would sit on the floor. There were lots of them. Sometimes a person would lecture, a sage would lecture for hundreds or thousands of students, and they would sit on the floor. When the sage would come in, often there'd be a packed room, and he'd have to get to his place in order to lecture. So often the sage would then walk between the people sitting on the floor. And it would almost look like you're stepping on the people. The expression in Hebrew is, "Lifsa al arosh," so they would be stepping on the heads of the people. Right? So Rabbi Lazar ben Shamua said that my entire life, whenever I lectured, I was particularly careful when I came in the room not to do that. I was particularly careful to walk around and not to walk in a way where it would appear that I'm disrespecting my students in any way. He was the sage. He was the leader. But the same Rabbi Lazar ben Shamua said elsewhere in the Ethics of the Fathers, he said that when you teach, your students' honor should be as dear to you as the honor for yourself. Treat them like you would treat yourself. They might be your subordinates. They might be people who you need to guide. There might be people who you need to be firm with sometimes. There might be people you need to reprimand, you need to tell off, you need to criticize even, because they're your students, that's your responsibility. That's your role, because in a relationship every person has a role. And that's fine, you need to exercise that role with great emphasis. But that doesn't mean that you don't receive from them. That doesn't mean they don't have individual value that you have, that you don't have. And therefore you need to respect them, because they're a different person than you. You need to preserve the individuality, to preserve the uniqueness. And therefore he said that you should treat a student like you would treat yourself. And the commentaries say that it's based on a story with Moses. Moses was a leader, right? his most treasured disciple was Joshua, Yehoshua. And it says that when Moses had to wage a war against the Amalekites, the nation of Amalek that had attacked the Jewish people, so he gave an instruction, he gave a directive to Joshua, to choose an army, to choose 1,000 people from each tribe. That's the way it went. And the expression that Moses uses in the Torah is, "Bechar lanu anashim," let us choose people. He didn't say, go and choose people. He said, let us choose people. It was a collaborative thing. He was consulting with him. He was asking for his opinion. Because one of the expressions of respect is, if the other person is different to me, and if the other person has a unique contribution to make that I cannot make, if that person is a person who gives to me and I receive, even if they're lower than me, even if they're my student, even if they're younger than me, but they might have an opinion that's important. And therefore Moses, the great leader, consults with Joshua and he says, what's your opinion? I ask you your opinion because my opinion is important to me. I think my opinion has value. I respect myself. I think I'm an intelligent person. I think that if I have an opinion on something, it's an important thing. And therefore, if I think my opinion is important, I think your opinion is important too, even though you might be my student. So that's why the same Rabbi Lezer ben Shavua said that he was so careful to value that dignity of even a student, and therefore when he walked in the room, he was so careful not to walk in a way that would disrespect even his students. There was another sage called Rabbi Zakkai, and I asked him, how come he lived long? What did he do? Very fascinating passage in the Talmud that goes to all the people that lived long. So he says that he responded, one of the things he did that he was particularly careful about was never to develop a nickname for a friend. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't mean a name of endearment, one shouldn't be confused there, right? But it's more of the Maimonides brings that a derogatory nickname for someone is a terrible, terrible thing. It says someone who calls, you know, it's interesting how sometimes we find in Jewish literature certain things that are considered terrible, worse than other things. One of the things it says is Amchaneshem Lachavero, someone who develops a derogatory nickname for a friend. You think it's only a job. It's only a job. But it might be a job to you, but it might be something that the other person doesn't quite receive as a job. If it's something that in any way compromises the dignity and the respect of the other individual, the Rambam says that such a person will not have a share in the world to come. That's how sharp it is. Right? So it says, I'm just quoting it. Someone who, right? I mean, a person can always repent, a person can always ask forgiveness, etc. So this Rabbi Zakkai, he says that he was particularly careful about this concept. Never to, in any way, call a person by a name that would express any trace of compromise of dignity. There was another sage, I'm just giving you different expressions of respect that all come from the same concept. They're different ways of respecting, but they come from the same idea. Rabbi Prater, there was a great sage, Rabbi Prater, that Talmud says he lived very, very long. And I asked him, what did you do to deserve longevity? So one of the things he said was that, you know, when people get together, when they eat a meal, they say Birkat HaMazon. They bench, right? Now there's a concept that someone leads the benching, right? Like if you have a crowd together, you lead the benching. There's always a question, halacha, who should lead the benching, right? So one of the laws that's brought down in the code of law is that if you have a kohen there, someone who's a kohen has an intrinsic role that was given to him by God that we need to honor kohanim. That's why we call a kohen after the first, you know, the first call up of the Torah is always a kohen, etc. So if there's a kohen, you're supposed to give the kohen to lead the benching. Now, it's not so simple because there's a whole discussion. How about if there's a great, renowned Torah scholar in the presence of a kohen? Maybe the Torah scholar should take it first. But Rabbi Prater said, I never ever led the benching if there was a kohen in the room. Even though he was the sage. He was the renowned sage. Everyone would want to for sure give him the honor of leading the benching. He said, I never did that. Why not? That's an interesting expression of respect. Because as I said before, part of respect is, one of the expressions of respect is that we respect that everyone has a different role. Now, roles come from a host of different reasons. But in the case of a kohen, for example, a kohen has a different role. It's a God-given role. It's not superior, it's not low, it's not higher. It's a different role. It's a role that deserves certain respect, that God wanted us to respect the kohen because they have a certain role in the temple, whatever the case is. Appreciation and values of different people's roles leads to respect. Rabbi Prater implemented this with great emphasis, that he understood the role of a Kohen, and he said, I need to respect that role. And if that role demands a certain level of respect, I will never lead the benching in the presence of a Kohen, even though I'm the most renowned scholar. Now, another sage, Rabbi Nechunya ben Akona, he was asked why he lived long, so he said, I was particularly careful, a very interesting thing, never to get any respect at the expense of someone else's humiliation. It's very easy to be honored by someone else's downfall, or even subtly to receive honor from someone and it involves someone else compromising their respect. So he said, I was particular never ever to receive any honor or respect from anyone if it meant compromising someone else's dignity or someone else's respect. And finally, another sage, Rabbi Zeira, was asked how come he merited longevity. And he said, because I never ever got angry with any of my family members. Okay? There's a secret to longevity. I never got that. Let's for a moment, let's analyze this last one. First of all, if anyone is in Rabbi Zeira's category, this is not for you. Let's analyze this one. What do you mean he never got angry with any of his family members? Did he never reprimand them? Did he never criticize them? Was he never firm with them? He didn't discipline them? I'd submit to you that he did, because otherwise he'd be negligent in his responsibilities. Right? But anger management is a tough area, right? And we've tackled it in various different ways. But one of the strategies, one of the things that one has to reflect on in order to manage anger properly is just this concept of respect. Because anger is a expression of disrespect. That's what anger is. It's not what I say that's an expression of disrespect. Because often what I say needs to be said, because that's the difference between roles and respect. I might have a role as a family leader, as a father, as I'm sure Rabbi Zeira did, to say things that can be very tough, because that's the role of a parent. But when you do it in anger, that's an expression of disrespect. Anger means that I don't value you. Anger means that you're okay to scream at. Anger means you're okay to wipe the floor with. Anger means I don't value your individual role. I don't value your dignity. I don't value your uniqueness. I don't see you as an important, unique, divinely imprinted upon individual. Because one has to separate that. If I did, because that goes back to the whole thing we've been emphasizing. When you value another person's individuality, you respect every single individual, doesn't matter how young and how old. If they happen to be my child and I need to set them straight, that's fine. But I need to do that with respect. I need to do it because that's my role. But I need to do it with utmost respect. Because I need to value them as an individual. I need to receive from them. I need to understand they give to me as much as I give to them. And they contribute to the relationship things that I cannot contribute to that relationship. And without them, the relationship will be completely incomplete and imperfect. You look confused.
But I'm not sure that I agree with that. If you're angry at someone, you completely don't respect them.
Well,
can't you just be angry, but you still respect, like you're just angry at their behaviour?
Okay, good question. We've done this in the past. Let me just define the word anger. Because you remember that I said this in the past, comes from Bartosky. He says that there's three stages in anger. Right? There's the feeling of anger, there's rage, and then there's resentment. I'm talking about rage, I'm not talking about anger. Okay. Yes, no, you can definitely feel hurt with someone, and you can definitely be angry, and feeling angry with someone because they hurt you, because they did something you don't like, is not an expression of disrespect. Right? However, it's the expression of that anger when you fly into a rage, right? That's an expression of disrespect. Why? Why? Let's just develop it in the context of your question. Because if I really respected them, okay, one of the things, we're going to talk about it later, but I'll just switch it around. One of the things that respect brings to, respect also allows me to judge someone differently, judge someone favorably, and to understand someone where they're coming from. Now, you could have done something to me, I might be angry, but if I respect you, I will try and understand you, right? Even after I understand you, by the way, I might not agree with you. And if it's my child and I don't agree with them, and it's my responsibility to disagree with them and to set them straight, then I will voice that disagreement. But I still understand them. And once you understand them, I'll understand where they're coming from. I'll understand that they see the world differently to I do. That's part of respect. Not everyone sees the world the way I do. Not everyone feels the way I do. Not everyone has feelings and sees things the way I do. Therefore, if I understand that person, even if I have to point out to what they did was wrong, if that's my role, but I'll do that with respect, with outrage. And without maintaining resentment, because I will get over that, because I respect the person. So the initial anger, we've said this before, the initial anger is something that you cannot overcome. Most people cannot overcome initial anger. Just that's an instinctive reaction that we all have, and that's fine. That's human. It's nature. That's natural. But it's how we manage it that has to do with respect. The word anger actually refers to the initial feeling of being very hurt and angry. The next is rage, that I express it by screaming and shouting, and screaming and shouting inevitably comes with putting the person down. It always comes like that, right? Right? You don't scream and shout and say, "You're such a nice person." Normally you scream and shout and say, "You've ruined my day," right? And who do you think you are? And chutzpah, you know, that kind of thing, right? And then there's resentment, that even after I stop, because no one, most people at least, don't fly into rage for a very long time, because normally finishes after a while. But what happens is the resentment continues because I just can't get over it. Right. Now I must highlight something very important. We're talking about respect. That it is, and this is an unfortunate fact, but it needs to be said because it's so true. Sometimes we respect people that are close to us less than we respect people that are distant from us. And that's a very sad reality, and it needs to be spoken about. And the reason is very simple. The reason is reason goes back to what we spoke about last week and the beginning of today. Because it's the relationship between respect and love. People who I love matter to me more, in a way. But if I don't have the perspective of respect really strong, then that love becomes distorted. I might not care about the next door neighbor, but if it's my wife or it's my child, I care more. And if I don't have a really strong foundation of respect, the more person I love, the quicker I can express things that are disrespectful. Number one. Secondly, there's a familiarity issue. But people feel that because someone is so close to them, so they won't mind. You often hear, "It's just a joke." You hear in public spouses making fun of each other. It's a terrible, terrible thing. They first shouldn't make fun of them in private either. But right, if you've got something to say, say it nicely. Anyone has to say it. Right? But you see, even in public, in front of other people, that someone who would never, ever put someone else down, someone who you would be respected in the community as a mensch, as a nice person, and yet you see them around people they're very close to, they'll put them down. They'll be abrupt with them. Right? And respect is such an important value, and it's even more important with people who we love. Because it's so critical to the relationship. It's so critical to making sure the relationship is nurtured and thrives and survives. Because the more I love someone, the more respect is so important. And therefore, I thought it's just really important to mention this, that when we talk about respect, and we talk about respecting individuality, the uniqueness, the difference of the other person, it's much more important to emphasize when it comes to someone that is so close to me, because that's a person who it's so easy to forget that they're different to me. Because they're so close to me, I need to remember that they're not me, they're unique, they're different, they see the world differently, they have different feelings, and I need to respect them. Following on with some more expressions of respect. One of the things that real respect brings to, and this can be a huge problem in relationships, is the idea of expectations and acceptance. Okay. Very often, in relationships, all types of relationships, but particularly in marriage, people lose, even if they did respect each other, they lose respect. Why do they lose respect? Because either someone ends up doing something that's not nice, that's terrible, that causes the other person to lose respect. Or, what often happens is, that with time, you begin to realize that the person who you thought you were entering a relationship with is actually not exactly that same person. It actually turns out to be a bit of a different person. Now, either it turns out to be a totally different person, or you discover that there's more to the personality than you thought. Right? Now, that part is always going to happen. Maybe some of you remember, I once shared with you a beautiful thought. I'll just do it briefly because it's getting late. About why at a wedding we veil the bride. Right? And it goes back to people say it goes back to a tradition where there was two daughters of Lavan who married Jacob. Jacob had two wives, Rachel and Leah. Right? And he was intending to marry Rachel, and his father switched it at the last minute, and he ended up marrying Leah. Right? It's a famous Bible story. And then later he married Rachel as well. So they say that that's why we veil, the person goes to the badekan, that the groom goes into the room before the chuppah and puts the veil over the bride, because he needs to check that it's the right one. Right? But the problem with that explanation is that actually, if you think about it, it doesn't really make that much sense, because if I need to check it's the right one, I would unveil them, not veil them, right? Why put a veil over their face? Right? Especially in some communities, you know, where in some communities the custom is the bride wears a very thick veil, so she arrives at the chuppah, can't even see who she is. So maybe, you know, how do you know it wasn't switched at the last minute, right? So why would you veil them? But the answer that's given is this, that Rachel and Leah, Kabbalistically, actually are two parts of the same person. Historically, they were two people, but they represent two parts of the same person. Rachel, we are taught Kabbalistically, represents smoothness, where everything is smooth. There's no bumps. Rachel was a very smooth person. Yaakov was attracted to her originally because she was just this perfect individual. Leah, on the other hand, was a complicated personality. It said Leah cried a lot. She had complications. So, without going to the personality of Leah, but the concept of Leah represents rough edges, complexities, complicated personalities. What happens in every relationship is, you enter, any normal personality enters into a relationship because he wants to enter into a relationship with Rachel. Right? No one marries someone because they're complicated. Hopefully. Right? Right. You marry someone because you think they're Rachel, you think they're perfect, and vice versa. I don't know what the male equivalent of that is, but I think all men are complicated. So right? So a man marries a woman because he thinks she's Rachel. The problem is, as the Torah said with Yaakov, he wakes up the next morning and boom, it's Leah there. It's not Rachel. But that is true of every relationship. It might not happen the next morning, but with time, you will discover a layer. Because no one is perfect. Right? No one is perfect. And you will discover that they have parts of their personality that you didn't know about, and are not as attractive as you originally thought. Because everyone has rough edges. No one is perfect. So how do you deal with that? And that is why a relationship has to be so much based on respect and not only love. Because that goes back to what we said last week. If a relationship is based on love, love becomes self-centered. As soon as you discover the layer, as soon as it's not the Rachel there, that doesn't go well. And there's problems. But when you respect the person, even if you discover they have a big layer, you know what I mean? Like it's huge, right? If you really respect the person, first of all, you need to understand this, a very important thing. When there's a loss of respect in relationship, it is a huge problem. And it needs to be dealt with. When someone is in a relationship and they've lost respect, it's a huge problem because that relationship will not survive. Now, if it's a work relationship or it's a friend type of relationship, often what happens is when a person loses respect, you terminate the relationship. That's not such a big deal. Maybe. But the relationships are not that easy to terminate. And of course, when it comes to family relationships or marriage relationships, the ideal, the preferred option is always not to terminate it. You try and resolve it, you try and work it. But it will not be resolved if you cannot reignite and rediscover that respect. And the way you discover there's respect is by understanding what respect is. You can only respect someone if you accept them the way they are. If you learn to accept them. Now again, that doesn't mean you have to enter into a relationship with someone that's complicated. But when you do discover those parts that are difficult to respect, or something happens that compromises the respect, you need to understand the person. You need to accept the person. You need to have different expectations. Maybe you have to, as we spoke about once before, you have to remodify the expectations. Because if you have unrealistic expectations, then you cannot respect that person. But if you understand that the person, you know, one of the biggest mistakes people make in relationships is they enter a relationship thinking they're going to change the other person. Oh, I'll change it. Or I'll change her. No, you won't. Because as much as I have supported the notion that human beings can change, and I talk about this every single series we have, that is the unique difference between human beings and animal, and human beings can change, and they should change, but you're not going to change them. They have to change themselves. That's their problem. But if you enter into a relationship thinking you're going to change someone, there's two problems with that. First of all, it's impossible, and second of all, it's disrespectful. Why is disrespectful? Because it means you don't value them who they are. You don't accept them for what they are. Unless, of course, it's a vertical relationship where that's my role, is to educate them. And of course, if I'm a father, if I'm a teacher, then I do need to change people. But I need to change people also with respect. As the verse tells us in Tanakh, that even in education, you need to educate each child according to their unique individual expression. Different discussion. But even then, you have to value the individuality. But with equal relationships, with friends, with marriages, with work relationships, if you enter into a relationship to try and change the person, it's actually an expression of disrespect. Because you're not valuing the person the way they are. Now, sometimes the person might call out for change. They might call out for support. That's different. If someone has a weakness, the more you accept that weakness, the more you accept the person for the way they are, the better chances you have of them actually admitting that they also have the weakness and asking you for support in helping them change. That's different. If they have the desire to change themselves and you support that, that's an expression of respect. But when you go in, try bulldozing a process of change, that's an expression of disrespect. And therefore, an expression of respect is to have realistic expectations of another person and to really value them the way they are and to learn to accept people for what they are. And therefore, just summarizing some of the expressions of respect last week and this week, respect means in all relationships showing a genuine interest in things that are important to the other person. Respect means valuing the other person's opinion. Respect means, these are all expressions of respect. Right? Respect means never putting another person down. Never, ever putting another person down. Respect means not to judge a person, to learn how to accept people and to understand them from where they've come. You don't have to agree with them, but understanding from where they come from. Respect means being sensitive to another person's feelings. Right? Learning to be in tune with what matters to them, even though it might not matter to you. Respect also means, we haven't really discussed this, time is late, being truthful. Right? Dishonesty with someone who you have a relationship with is a form of disrespect. Respect also means listening, but we'll talk about that later when we get to ask and talk. But the problem with all this is you cannot just begin with the practical expressions of respect. Because as I began with, respect is really a mindset. And therefore, to practice respect, one actually has to begin with practicing this whole idea of valuing other people. And therefore, as a practical thing, the first step to learning to improve our respect for other people is to take all the people that we have a relationship with and to actually, in our mind, or maybe even on a piece of paper, to make a list about what is it about that person that we value. Because if we don't value the other person, we've got a real problem. Every person we could value. With every person we can highlight things that we value and we respect. You know what's just, I'll just end with this thought. You know what I often think about, and it's a very morbid thought, but it's a very true thought, unfortunately. You know, unfortunately, a lot of times, when you go to a funeral, right, that's when you hear all the good things about people. Right? Especially, you know, sometimes when people pass on and it's a little bit tragic, it's amazing how all of a sudden, and people mean this very genuinely, People turn around and say, that's such a wonderful person. They list and they give you 8 things, 10 things that were so wonderful about that person. And it often puzzles me, like the only good people pass away. I mean, like, what does that mean? Maybe, I don't know, right? The answer is very simple, because when they're gone, we always appreciate the good things. Every person has things we can value. And as many times I've thought about this, after, especially when it's been more emphasized or for a person who's younger, one of the things I've always tried, doesn't always last that long, but it, you know, one of the things I always try and resolve in my mind is, that why don't we do this when people are around? Like, why don't we actually... Because everyone has rough patches, which we always tend to highlight. We all know that when you have a clean piece of paper and there's a black dot in the middle, you'll see the black dot and you won't see the clean paper, right? That's true, we focus on the negative. But we can't respect them if we do that. So one of the things we have to begin with, before we can have all these consequences and symptoms of respect, is to actually take people that we relate with and in our mind, go over again, repeat those messages in our mind, what is it about that person that I really value? And if you value the person, then you can have all these expressions of respect. What we're going to do next week is we're going to go to the next letter of relate, which is E, the empower, which is a follow-on from respect, and it's a very important part of our relationships. Have a wonderful day.